So remember, we're discussing the other day about unification. You were asking, oh, how do the couplings run and where do they meet? So remember, we were saying that so you have 1 over the coupling strength, right? And you had these three lines, something like this for the standard model. Now, if you want to unify, how do you make it a predictive theory? Okay, if you want the theory to unify. So what happens is, so you have 1, 2, 3. So you see how, for example, when 2 and 3 unify, and then you have a prediction for 3, okay? And this is what this plot shows. So you measure alpha 3, you predict one of, so you see where one of the two couplings meets, and sine squared theta w, the weak angle, is the ratio basically between the two couplings of u1 and of the hypercharge and su2. So depending on the particle content you have at low energies, what the beta functions are, you'll get different predictions for those things. So for any given value of the strong coupling, you will get the different prediction for the ratio of the two couplings between hypercharge and SU2. So this is what it shows. So there is one band for a prediction for supersymmetry, and there is another band for non-supersymmetric theories. And so in 1981, people were doing measurements of these things all the time at different energies and different colliders. So it looked like it was the standard model had the right structure to kind of unify, okay? And but things improved with time. So people built LEP, okay? And in 1994, they got this number. So this is exactly what makes supersymmetry very popular at the time, okay? So it wasn't just that people liked it or it's pretty. There was experimental evidence, indirect. They hadn't seen any particles, right? But this measurement makes supersymmetry extremely popular, okay? Now, fast forward another 10 years, and supersymmetry, it's still better than the standard model. It's not as perfect as it used to be, okay? But we haven't found Susie yet. And of course, there is the question, what does the standard model unify to? And this is what we will discuss today. Now, before I do that, now I can press this back up. Presentation. Stop presentation.
Could,
yeah.
Could you quickly tell us? So,
sorry.
What's the experiment here?
This is LEP and LHC.
And what did they measure exactly?
So they measure the values of the coupling. So you measure alpha 3, right?
Yeah.
And then if you measure any one of the other ones,
okay,
you can predict and get a prediction of psi squared theta w, okay, the ratio, see, which is basically the ratio between the two couplings. So let me go up here. Okay, so now, before we start, we need to backtrack a bit and do the following. So I need to introduce you guys to Val notation instead of Dirac notation, otherwise we'll be sitting here forever trying to figure out how to write these things. So let me rewrite now. Where is the eraser? Ah, here. So let me rewrite the particle content of the standard model, and I will explain why, okay? And I will rewrite it in the way that you guys are used to writing it. So you say, now let's write the matter content because nothing else is relevant for this. The other guys are fine. So you write the left-handed quarks, and they have a charge 3, 2, 1/6, okay? And then you write, oh, I have u right, and I have 3 1 minus plus 2/3, and I have d right, where I have 3, 1, minus 1/3. Okay? And then I have the leptons. We have 1, 2, minus 1/2. And then we have e right, which is 1, 1, minus 1. And in this notation, for example, so you have three copies of these guys and another three of these guys, okay? And this is the Dirac notation. In this notation, you write your Kappa couplings to the Higgs, for example, as you have H, the Higgs particle, you have Q left, U right bar, okay? And then you have, of course, the index here, you have lambda I j. Okay? Now, this is what is known as the Dirac representation of the fermions, okay? In this notation, fermionic fields, this Q left, is not an irreducible representation of the Lorentz group, okay? Basically, Q left, there is a smaller Q here, and then, and these are two component spinors. Similarly for U right, it's a right-handed one, so the top one is zero, and the bottom one you have a U bar, where U bar is equal to I sigma 2. This is the Pauli matrix, and U star, where now U star, U is a two component spinor that has quantum numbers 3 bar, 1, and minus 2/3. Okay? So this is a notation that's very useful when you talk about these guts, when we will talk about supersymmetry, because in supersymmetry what's relevant is the irreducible representation of the fermions in the Lorentz group, not the Dirac notation that you guys are used to. Okay? So similarly, so this is Dirac, and this is Weil. Okay. And this D here, now, for the left-handed fields, you have a third, and then you have E. The right-handed electron here gets transformed, it becomes 1, 1, 1. Now, when you contract, and these fields have an index alpha, right, that transforms under the Lorentz group. So now when you write the U-kavas in this notation, the U-kavas are just lambda ij, h, for example, q, u. And for this is for the up-type quarks, and then for the down-type quarks, you have dh dagger qd. Now, at this level, writing down the coupling is a bit simple. The complexity comes when you try to calculate scattering amplitudes. In the two notation, you have to be careful about coefficients and so forth, right? But for our purposes, actually, it's going to be more convenient to talk about this type of spinors. Okay? Good. Now that that is out of the way, we are ready to discuss to discuss what the standard model can unify to. So the first model of unification came in, so there was a paper by Georgia and Glashow. Okay. Which is in 1974. And they noticed the following thing. They noticed that if I look at the gauge structure of the standard model, I can embed it very nicely in an SU5. Okay. And if you look at the generators of SU5, the way it works, you see that SU3 sits up here, SU2 sits down here in the diagonal elements. Now, this is a 3x3, this is another 2x2, and they are the different generators of the SU5 group. Here you have some extra gauge bosons, which we will talk about. And then the hypercharge is a diagonal generator of the SU5, which looks like this. So you have here, you have a third, one third, one third, minus one half, minus one half, and then there is a very important multiplicative factor of square root of 3/5. So now let's look at this particle content of this theory. So first they notice this, okay? So it looks like all the gauge bosons of the standard model can be embedded in this large SU5 gauge group. Now, the other thing that happens is that, so the SU5 contains the gluons, 8, 1, 0, contains the W boson, the Z boson, contains the singlet boson of the U1 boson of hypercharge. And now we have two extra guys. We have the X and Y boson, these guys that sits in the off-diagonal term, that actually have both color charge and weak charge and hypercharge, okay? So they have a 3, 2, and minus 5, 6. They have a very funny hypercharge assignment. And they 3, 2, and of course there is the antiparticle of these guys. Okay? So in the high energies you have additional force carriers, basically. So this is the X and Y bosons are here, what we know, and then these are basically the antiparticles of these guys. Now, where do the particles fit in? So this is what happens to the gauge boson, so you have extra things when you try to do that. What happens to matter fields? They noticed the following. They've noticed that if I look at an anti-fundamental of SU5, an anti-fundamental representation, which is usually denoted by 5 bar, you have, it can be decomposed as follows. So you have two particles in here that look like this. Which particles are these from the standard model?
This is the D.
Yeah.
And that's the L.
D and L, exactly. Now, the rest ones, so this is very nice because you have color and lepton particles in the same representation. So now you see that the forces unify, right? So the weak force starts unifying with color. Now the rest of the particles fit into what is known as an anti-symmetric representation of SU5. And you have here a 3, 2, a 6. These are the quarks. Here you have 3 bar, 1, minus 2/3, okay, which is the U. And here you have, did I write it correctly? Yeah, I did. The right-handed electrons, okay? So the left-handed quarks are here. The up-type quarks are in the antisymmetric. And also you have the right in the antisymmetric. So these two representations fit, and this is just times 3, and you get 3 families. It's really nice, very nice. It looks beautiful, okay? So this was exactly the main point of their paper. So it looks like everything is very economical, pretty. Now, where does the Higgs fit? Can you guys guess? Where would you put the Higgs? In what type of representation? Given what I have written, it's one of the two. Which one would fit the Higgs?
So you are saying there is something like missing?
Yeah, because we need to put the Higgs somewhere, right?
Yeah, but
this is
for the matter? Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
So this is 3 copies of this. I need to fit the Higgs somewhere, because when I need to write the Yukawas, I need to write them as invariant under SU5. So this is an anti-fundamental. There is fundamental, which is the antiparticle of this. And then there is the antisymmetric. So which one of the two would you put the Higgs? Or the 3, I guess. There is fundamental, anti-fundamental, antisymmetric.
I would take fundamental cross anti-fundamental, right? To get like a scalar under something.
Well, the Higgs, no. So, okay, good. So what we need to write is Yukawas. So if I start looking at the Yukawas here, the way I would write the Yukawa would be 10, and then I need something for the Higgs.
Yeah.
So what charges, forget about how you write the couplings. What charges, if I have the anti-fundamental, okay, has these charges. The fundamental has exactly, it's the antiparticle.
Yeah.
So what charges does the Higgs have, and where would you put it? It's not a fermion, right? The presentations can be fermionic, can be scalar representations. It's just how they transform under group theory. Oh, I haven't written the Higgs anywhere. So then I need to put another sheet here.
The Higgs is 1/2 charge, right?
Yes, so where would you put it here?
Wait, I have to...
Yeah, guys, what has 1/2 charge?
Leptons.
Yeah, but the fundamental, right? You need to have, this is the anti-fundamental. Have to put the Higgs, a 5 will contain a 3, a 1, a minus a 3rd, plus 1, 2, a 1/2. And this exactly this, the guy is the Higgs. This is the minimum where I can invent the Higgs. But you see here, we have a bit of a problem. We start having a bit of, now we started to get extra matter fields, okay? So these are the colored Higgses. Okay? So now this is where we get extra stuff. We start getting extra stuff. We had before, well, we already had, because the generators of SU5 were giving you extra gauge bosons. Now, the moment you have to embed the Higgs and be able to write Yukawas in an SU5 invariant way, you have more Higgses. Okay? And this is actually a bit of a problem. So now, the Yukawas can be written as this. So the Lagrangian, so this guy here is a representation of antisymmetric, antisymmetric. You don't have to know this. If you do, if you ever study group theory in detail, you would see that if I add, if I have two antisymmetric representations and contract appropriately the indices, all I need to do is to add a 5, and that will give me a singlet under SU5. Okay? Now, this gives me the uptype Q covers. Okay? And then, if I want to write the downtype U covers, I need to do the following. I need to take the dagger of the Higgsies, which transforms as an anti-fundamental, and then I have a 10 and a 5 from the matter field. So this is lambda up, and this is lambda a j down, essentially. Okay, yes?
So the way I do this is that I take like a 5 index anti-symmetric tensor?
Yeah. Oh, no, 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 no. This is a single, it's a single index, right? So this is like a column. So usually the way you do group theory, in, like we do here, it's a column, and then an anti-symmetric has two indices. So you have to properly contract them.
Yeah, so I will take like a 5 index epsilon, I contract 4, right? And I'm left with 1, and I contract it with the fundamental index.
No, no, no. So
I think what I did is that the epsilon times 5 fives.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Is 1.
Yeah, yeah.
And then take group 2.
You're right. Yeah, I think you're correct. Yeah, yeah, okay, good, thank you. Yes, thank you, Gang. So now here, so this is the downtop you covers, okay?
Don't you need a 5?
Sorry, it's here. Perfect, thank you. Now let's decompose these guys, right? So as you will see, complications arise for several reasons. First of all, we have extra Higgsies, okay? So when we decompose the 5, the uptype U covers, we have 10, have a 10. This will give you, we have a Higgs, a Q, U. This is what we expect, so this is great. Then now we have extra stuff. We have the colored Higgsies. We have Q, Q. This is actually, it's like a baryon, right? These have 3 indices of SU3 that are contracted with the epsilon tensor. So this is allowed by gauge symmetries. And then I have this. Have U and E. So these two are a bit problematic. And the reason they are problematic is you see now that this guy has to carry baryon number. Okay? 3 quarks make baryon number 1. So if this has baryon number 1, it means this guy has to have baryon number. But you also see here that now this operator is something that mixes baryons and leptons. So what you can do now, based on this diagram, now let's continue. Let's write for completeness, we also have 5 dagger here for the Higgs, have a 10 and a 5 bar. The other Yukawa will give us the H dagger QD, which is again what we want. It will give us the leptons, the lepton U covers, which is again what we want up to a caveat. And then now we have extra stuff that come from the colored Higgsies. So we have U, D, and then there is Q, L. So again, the colored Higgsies are a bit problematic. So what I can do, in fact, is draw the following Feynman diagram. So I have QL, then I have a colored Higgs, and then I take this guy and I have QQ. And this will give me actually, so if I see, look at these three quarks, it converts three quarks to a lepton. This is not good. This is proton decay. Okay? So now, question for you guys. Can you estimate the lifetime of the proton decay as a function of the mass of the colored Higgs? So how, if I were to tell you, so tell me the order of magnitude of the proton decay based on this diagram.
1/mass² of the Hc.
That's in the amplitude, right? The rate is amplitude squared.
Oh, okay.
So you have to have 4, okay? Now, the other thing that you have here are the Yukawas, right? Some type of U1 and U2 squared. Some Yukawas. The other thing, what should complete the dimensions here? What dimension should the rate have in fundamental units?
Mass.
Exactly. So what do we need here?
Some mass.
Yes, but exactly, mass of the proton, because that's the available energy in the decay. So usually what enters here when you do decay is the mass of the proton to the fifth power. And then you should know as a future when you estimate diagrams. So if you have a two-body decay, you have a factor of 1/4 pi. The moment you have a one particle going to three particles, every time you add an additional particle, you have a loop, you add a loop factor, 1/16 pi². Okay? So that's a bit of a mnemonic, because even though pi is dimensionless, it's 3. So if you multiply enough powers of pi, then you get large numbers, okay? So so this is a good mnemonic for now, what is the expectation for the colored Higgs mass?
The gut scale, I guess.
Well, it sits in the same representation as the Higgs, right?
Okay, so that's
so not then, no, what is the expectation? What mass should it be?
Yeah, like the electric scale.
Exactly. So now let's do the math. Okay, so let's do the math. So the rate of the proton decay through the colored Higgs is, I'm going to call this a tenth, okay, between friends. So this is 10 to minus 1 from phase space. I'm going to assume, for simplicity, Yukawas are order 1, and then we can discuss that. Now, what is the mass of the proton?
1 GeV.
Yeah, 1 GeV. And then to the fifth power. And then here we put 100 GeV to the fourth power. Okay? So this gives you roughly 10 to the minus 9 GeV, also known as 10, sorry, did I do it right? 10, 8, yeah, I think I did right. So this 10 minus 9, this is 1 EV. If you convert this to seconds, to hertz, you get a rate of 10 to the minus 15 hertz. That's not good, okay? Given that we are around, this is not great. The only solution is to make this guy heavy. And this is where all the problems of gut unification start. You have so many extra fields when you start doing things properly that this is what is known as the double triplet splitting problem. Okay? And people had to imagine very weird breaking patterns for the gut scale. Usually the most naive way to break the gut, let me leave this here. The most naive way to break the gap. Take this down. Is you take an adjoint, a scalar adjoint of SU5, which has you have a scalar adjoint of SU5, which gets a VEV, has a VEV, and it breaks down to the diagonal. So 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. So if you do that, you see that you leave hypercharge and the 3-to-1 structure unchanged. Now, the problem is that the way that you would give the Higgs mass in this case is you write sigma. This is it has a dimensionality of 24. And then you write 5 and 5 dagger. This 5 and 5 dagger transforms like an adjoint. So this is a singlet now. But then you see that if I give this naive VEV that breaks things very nicely in a very beautiful way, I automatically give the up the colored Higgses and the ordinary Higgs the same mass. So people in reality, when they try to construct real models of GATs, they run into issues like this. Okay? And the issues continue. So let's say that people extended this beyond the adjoint. You can have even more complex representations of the group. Now, there is another issue that even if we solve that problem, there is still a prediction for the decay of the proton. Because I still have this diagram. I can still make this very heavy at the GATT scale. But at the same time, if you look at here, I also have these guys, the Gauge bosons. And the Gauge bosons will also mediate proton decay. So after George Ice, and this is not, in fact, a problem. In fact, people propose this as a signature of grand unification. So from the 80s, people have been building huge detectors to look for proton decay. Now, you can do the math. You can see that if I put here 10 to the 16 GeV, then this becomes very easily, because it goes like the fourth power of this mass, it becomes very easily very long-lived. But that's also the problem now. The current bound, the lifetime of the proton, has to be larger than 10 to the 34 years. Okay, this is much longer than the age of the universe. So for us to observe something to see if something decays at a lifetime much longer than the age of the universe, what we have to do is to get to observe a large number of protons decay. So people said, oh, I'm going to have many events if I make this number very large. So they started building huge detectors. The biggest one so far is Super Kamiokande in Japan. And they have ultra-pure water, basically no radioactivity, nothing. And it's a 30 by 40 meter cylinder. Okay, and this is the one that plays this constraint. And they have it surrounded by photomultipliers, right? Because you want to see the electrons that come out of the decay of the proton. The photons, basically you have things decay to electrons and pions, and then those produce photons and you detect the photons, okay?
So it's easy to detect if it decays, right?
It's not easy to detect, that's the point. You need a lot of number, right? If you want to detect one event per year, you need 10 to the 34 atoms, right? And 10 to the 34 protons. So it's not easy to detect. In fact, if you look at, so you know from Avogadro's number, right?
Yeah.
So you have 10 to the 23 atoms, and maybe 100 times more protons than that if the atom is big, in a centimeter cubed. You need to have a volume of 10 to the 10 centimeter cubes, also known as roughly 10,000 meter cubes or something like that.
But what I mean is that, like, yeah, since it decays into like photon
and oh, no, no, the decay is very energetic. The decay is very energetic. The problem is you need to make sure you have no backgrounds, because if you have any radioactive decays in the vicinity, they have similar energetics. So that's your background. That's why they needed ultra-pure water. Now, the next iteration of Super Kamiokande, which is currently being commissioned from what I understand, right? Hyper Kamiokande, it gets a factor of 2 in dimensions. So it becomes 2 times wider and 2 times taller. But now the question is, okay, so you have a factor of 10 in the number. How much does it improve the scale that you would be probing? If I get a factor of 10 in the rate, improvement in the rate. It's the fourth root, right? It's not great. It's very slow project, progress. So now, slowly, people are starting to hit kind of a wall. The interesting thing, actually, was historically, it's been a roller coaster for proton decay. Now we have all considered. But in the early 80s, they had some events. I think it was Kamiokande. I think it was the first. I could be wrong on this. I think it was the first version of Super Kamiokande, where they saw a much shorter lifetime that would match the rough unification scale in the standard model, not SUSY. But SUSY pushes the unification scale higher. So this is still consistent with supersymmetry. Okay? But it's a very hard search to do. And you see, it's because of this scaling right here.
Can you replicate like the baryonic asymmetry we see in the universe with this during nuclear synthesis or something?
No, because these are extremely low energies, right? So what you have is a bunch of protons, like in water, and which is hydrogen and oxygen, and waiting for them to decay.
Yeah, with this, I mean the vertex. It's not the proton decays.
No, because the effects, if you have additional phases in these yukavas, the particles that are responsible for these are so heavy that the effects will be too small. So it's not enough. You need some other scale of physics to do it. Well, that's actually not true. Sorry, I spoke too fast. In principle, yes. If you reheat the universe very high, if the initial temperature of the universe is at the gut scale, 10 to the 16 GeV, then all these particles will be there. But you need to have some weird, and people have thought about these models, but I'm not very familiar with them. So I won't do them justice if I try to explain them to you. So people have tried to do that. So gut baryogenesis, well, I think actually, in fact, some of the first ideas that people came up with. Okay? The problem is, though, that the particles responsible are very heavy. So these ideas are actually very hard to probe experimentally. Okay? But you're right. You made a very good point. You have extra parameters, so you can have additional CP violation, and you can imagine that you do something with it. Okay, talk about proton decay. Now, other problems that arise. So, flavor. Flavor is another huge issue, because here you see that in principle this Yukawa matrix is the same for the down type quarks and the leptons. So you expect at high energies the values of the Yukawas, the down type quarks, the values of the down type Yukawas are the same values as the lepton Yukawas. And that is true only for the heaviest guys, for the bottom and the tau. So if you do gauge, if you run the couplings, the Yukawa couplings at high energy for these heavy guys, you see that they unify. Which was, people were happy about that. It doesn't work so well for all the others, though. That's the other problem. Okay? So flavor is both a blessing. There are hints that some of the things may unify, but there is also hints that it doesn't work as well as you thought. So people actually started building very complicated models, also in conjecture with trying to solve this problem of how you break the symmetry while making one Higgs light and the others heavy. Okay? And in doing so, they started also expanding the group. So instead of having just SU5, they had started adding other groups. So they have, the talk people started talking about another one that's very popular is SO10. And SO10 is popular because it contains an SU5 times an additional U1, which is the B minus L symmetry of the low energy standard model, baryon minus lepton number. So that's another one that people talked about. Here, a 16 of SU5, a 16 representation of SU5 contains one family. So one representation contains all the ingredients of one family, and this guy here is just the right-handed neutrino. And then it goes so forth and so forth, and the problem is always, how do you deal with flavor? Okay, how do you get the right Yukawas out? And how do you make sure that the colored Higgs is heavy? So what was initially a very good idea started looking a very baroque type of thing. But as I showed you in the beginning, nevertheless, the data did show that you unify to something. The other thing that people thought about is not as as a single group. People thought about what is known as the Patti-Salam. And here the color is embedded in an SU4. This has color. And then you have SU2 left. You have an SU2 left. And then you have SU2 right. So these are what are known as left-right symmetric models. So you have the same number of left-right particles and right-handed left-handed particles and right-handed particles. And here the representation looks like this. So the matter fields are so this guy contains Q, the left-handed quarks. And the left-hand leptons, and this guy, includes a representation like this. It includes U, D, E, and then you have the right-handed neutrinos. Okay, but at the same time, you have a lot of extra stuff. You have leptoquarks, so you have a lot of matter fields here. But this is another model that was popular when people try to explain everything from the breaking of the gauge group to flavor when they try to put everything together. Okay? And some people still work on these things. Not so much anymore, though. Okay? Any questions? So far, because, yeah.
Could I somehow get rid of this sort of difference between the... Could I cook up this difference between the HC and H mass by sort of giving SUSIP, like, protection to one of the Higgses and that the other one would get, like, large quantum corrections or something like that?
No, because if you break SUSI at that scale, and you, the gauge couplings will communicate Suzy breaking, and we'll discuss on Wednesday, we'll discuss about that. That's a bit dangerous. What people usually do is they expand this very nice, this is a 24, it's an adjoint, and you see that the VEV is diagonal, looks really nice. So people expand the representation, so the VEVs appear in very weird places, and they have different size of VEVs in different directions. So the VEV of the that gives mass, so instead of the sigma has a much more complicated representation, and the Higgs has a more expanded representation, and then they start playing around with a VEV ratio of VEVs, and then you end up with something it's not pretty. I mean, Frank Wilczek, for example, wrote papers on this, and I mean, there was an entire period for years in the 80s where people tried to solve, writing huge papers and complicated. You can Google it, solving the Higgs double triple splitting problem. Google it, you will see the beauty queens that people created. Okay, it's mind-boggling how it was mostly an exercise. Okay, I get a group theory group. What is the most complicated thing I can write down almost? Another thing to notice is that I told you briefly, did you know that the generator of hypercharge, when you try to embed it in a generator, the hypercharge, when you try to embed it in a generator of SU5, it has a fixed coefficient. So the normalization of the gauge coupling depends on the UV completion. So this coefficient of square root of 3/5 changes depending on what gauge group you unify. And people have even tried to change that coefficient so that they make the standard model unify. But it doesn't always work. It has to be very specific because that coefficient is not a random coefficient. It's based on group theory and the fact that you have a Lie group that needs, the generators need to transform to satisfy certain relations, the 24 generators. So it's not random. So people had a lot of fun in the 80s with all these things. And in particular, even though they failed miserably, as I showed you in the beginning, what they made them extremely excited is the gauge coupling unification supersymmetry. So next time, we'll talk about the hierarchy problem and why, how Suzy helped you with that.
Is the color of the Higgs like a general prediction? Can you just cook up a group that has a nice representation for the Higgs?
Yeah, this is what people try essentially do. So they had to, the Higgs always had to be embedded with extra stuff. So you always had extra matter for the Higgs. There was no way that the Higgs could sit on its own. So you see the matter fields fit nicely in an anti-fundamental and an anti-symmetric of SU5. But the Higgs would always, because it's the only doublet, it comes on its own in a way. So there was no way to avoid that. So you had to add more Higgses at the high energy, and you had to somehow find a way to make those heavy and our Higgs light. This is the doublet Higgs doublet triplet Higgs doublet triplet splitting problem. And it's, as I said, many, many papers were written on the topic.
So our unification, make them always draw this interesting Dinton diagram of E8. Can you take a node off if you become E7?
E8 is an even bigger, right? E8 has even...
But if you keep going that process, you see SO10.
Yeah.
Take another node off, you can see SU5. One more, you get a standard model.
Exactly. But the problem is in each step, you have additional matter, right? So when you have, for example, in this group E8, the standard model fields are in 27 of that group, okay? Maybe it's CD7, I forget. I think it's a much larger representation. So you have additional fermions now that you have to deal with. So every step you take in this, in the grand unification ladder, you have to make sure you don't have leftover junk. And as I said, that's a huge problem. And people really like the Georgi Glashow because the matter fields fits so nicely in these representations. But the Higgsies are the odd man out. Always the Higgs. That Higgs is such a huge issue for the Standard Model. otherwise, it would have been so pretty. Anyway, yeah?
So if I take like Y8 cross Y8, in which representation does the Standard Model sit?
I think it's a 27, as I told you, but you have other stuff, right? So you have E8 if you C8. What is charged other than the other stuffs? Well, E8 cross E8, no. E8, I think, can embed the Standard Model on its own. So the question is how you break that EH. So the low energy gauge group that you have, is it a diagonal combination of the EHs? Because you can have things like that. So the question is now depends on the breaking pattern when you start going lower. And as I told you, every time you need to make sure you don't drag extra stuff with you. Okay? EH to cross EH. I know why you're asking. It is very but if you look at all those models, all those models, the scans that people have done, they always have extra things. And they never explain, actually, how they get a mass and they remain heavy, and you only have the Standard Model gauge, the Standard Model particle content at low energies. So, in fact, it's very easy to get extra stuff. The hard part is getting rid of them. Okay. And you get extra U1s, you get extra fermions, you get all sorts of extra things. And the other problem is also, as we'll discuss, is gauge coupling unification. So you can unify, you can put things in the same multiplets. Now, usually you will bring extra stuff, like supersymmetry has extra stuff at low energy. The question is, when you run the couplings, will they meet at the same point? Is that a possibility given what we know about the particle content of the Standard Model and the gauge couplings of the Standard Model? It's the combination of these two that make this game actually not as easy to do. Yeah, but E8 cross E8, sure. I mean.
I think that's because he works in string theory.
I know, that's why. But if you look at all those papers that try to get the Standard Model out of the. So there is always, I have SU321 is here, but, well, you have all these extra U1s, extra fermions and stuff. Where does that go?
Yeah, and so yeah. Why do I want the gauge couplings to meet? Like, if they miss a little bit, but they remain the same kind of, like, order, right? It's kind of fine.
Yeah, this is what people talk about. The question is, what is that order, okay? And then we start going. First of all, we need to remember that unification is a logarithmic accident, right? Because the gauge couplings run logarithmically. Now, the problem is that you need to have the exact right combinations of things so that things come and meet at the line. This is what people call threshold correction. So I showed you, like, in the beginning, that plot where the SUSY was just a bit off. I was like, what if I have at the breaking scale, I have, for example, some other type of Higgs, but everything is at the same scale. And you see now that when the Higgs gets a mass because of the charges, if a heavy Higgs representation gets because of the charges and the VEV, they will have order one different masses. This is what is known as threshold corrections. So you have one guy that's, let's say, usually it's the SU2 guy that's lighter, and then you have the color guy, factor of 10 in mass above. So in the meantime, one guy contributes to the running and the other guy does not, while the one guy is heavy and the other is light. So people, this is what are known as threshold corrections to unification. That's another thing that people did. Also not pretty. Yeah?
Yeah, so I turn on this other Higgs, it shifts the masses so that I sort of move a little bit.
Yeah, you understand now, you see now, it's like a balancing game. I really encourage you to Google and see what monstrosities people built. It's actually very, it's an exercise really in group theory and how to embed the standard model. I mean, at some point, I think in SO10, they were talking about 126, the representation of 126 for SO10 to get the break. Now we're talking about an adjoint, 24 has 24 particles essentially. So we're talking about huge, huge number of particles and stuff.
He's used to infinity.
He's used to...